We are talking about irises on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We have a couple of iris experts with us. George Bacon is president of the Madison Area Iris Society and owner of Breezeway Iris Gardens. He's a member of the American Iris Society, the Tall Bearded Iris Society, the Median Iris Society, the Historic Iris Preservation Society, the Reblooming Iris Society, and an AIS judge. And George Ravey is a member of the Madison Area Iris Society, as well as the American Iris Society and the Species Iris Group of North America. He is also an active participant in the Wisconsin Daylily Society. Do you have a question about irises? I'll bet you they have the answer, so give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And you can send an email or a picture if you need some identification help. And that email is ideas@wpr.org. So, George, Lloyd, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Now, obviously, you two really love irises. So what drew you to them? George, why don't you start?
Well, I came into it because my mother grew iris when I was growing up.
Ah.
And so I always loved them from a young child. And then at some point in my career, when I came back to Wisconsin, we just decided to start growing them again, and it kind of grew exponentially.
Literally.
Larger than we thought. And my dad was like, oh, you should go into business. And so we kind of did and started out very slowly on the internet and stuff. And then I became involved in the Madison Iris Society and the National American Iris Society. So it just keeps, you know.
There's a lot of societies. I had no clue there were that many.
Iris actually is one of the largest species genuses.
Are they?
And so there's so many different kinds, and a lot of people tend to specialize in what they like. I think most people, when they think of iris, they think of the classic tall bearded iris.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And even within bearded iris, there's, I think, 7 different classifications, from miniature to the talls. And, you know, a lot of people just don't even know about that. So one of the things that we try to do in the Iris Club is to educate people onto not only the different classifications of bearded iris, but all the different types. There's like another one that grows well in our area is like Siberian iris.
Right, yeah, they're beautiful.
And there's Japanese iris and Spirea iris, you know, and there's... Usually you can find, it's such a wide range of species that usually there's something that will grow anywhere in the world if you just do enough research and figure out what kind you need.
Sure, sure. And Lloyd, what about you? What brought you to iris?
Well, as a kid, I grew up on what was, I guess you'd call it, flower farm. We raised gladiolas.
Oh.
We had huge beds of irises and peonies and different things. And irises was my first experiment in plant breeding was with irises when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some luck crossing some of the tall beardeds. And more recently, I've enjoyed more doing the other species, either with the Japanese and Sadas or Siberians and that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, and they're so beautiful. And like you were saying, George, the varieties are just endless. At least it seems that way. Well, tell us about your business.
Well, we mostly sell on the internet. We do have some local events for our customers, which we have open house in the spring so people can just come see flowers in bloom. And those are usually the Memorial Day weekend and the weekend after.
Mm-hmm.
This year we kind of had to adjust a little bit because our season was very late.
Oh, yes, it was.
And then we have a sale at our house the last weekend in July.
Oh, okay. So you've got that coming up too.
Coming up next weekend.
Yeah. How many varieties do you have?
About 2,000.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all.
You're slacking there, George.
And we mostly have bearded iris because that's what's most popular.
Mm-hmm.
And but we have a good selection of Siberian. And we also try and experiment with and decide on what might work as Wisconsin reblooming iris, which is something that's sort of, it's been around for a long time, but some people don't know about it.
I didn't.
It's kind of up and coming. So an iris will, certain varieties tend to bloom in the spring, which is the normal time, and then they'll regenerate enough that they'll bloom in the summer to fall. And unfortunately, we're in a zone that's not prime for this. Like, I can think of an iris garden that I follow on Facebook that has iris in bloom 11 months out of the year.
And where is that?
In California.
Of course.
So the one thing that you have to be careful of when you're looking for a reblooming iris, and that's what a local club is helpful for, is to find out what varieties work in your zone. Because a lot of times I think people get frustrated because, you know, there used to be advertisements like in Sunday, that parade section in the paper and stuff, and they would say reblooming iris, but they weren't necessarily for our zone. And people would order them and be really upset. And we would get questions like at our club sale of like, why don't these rebloom? And actually, the Reblooming Iris Society makes a booklet that gives the varieties and what zones they rebloom in. But at our club sale, we have a whole table that's just dedicated to iris that rebloom in Wisconsin. So, it's a good selection this year. So if you're interested in trying those, come to the sale. And
And Lloyd, why don't you give us the details of the sale? Because that's this weekend.
That's this weekend, and it's from 9 until 5, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And as George says, that one section that, you know, with the rebloomers, now there's a lot of things in that might bloom in California as a rebloomer. And if they didn't bloom for us in here, those are in with the regular ones. The only ones that we put in that reblooming section are the actual rebloomers for us here in Wisconsin.
That's a great, it's a great reason to go to the local society's sales or shows, just because you know what's going to work in this state, right?
And that's in our mission statement. We're supposed to educate people, and that's what we like to do. And we like questions. We try to answer them the best of our abilities of what we know about irises. And
okay. Well, speaking of questions, we have one. Connie is online, and she's in Portage. Hi, Connie. What's your question about irises?
Hi. Well, we've lived here about 14 years. And the patch of iris was here, and it was blooming, and they're about a foot high now. And the last couple years, they're not blooming, and there's more shade, and I'd say they're at least 80% shade. Would that affect them?
Definitely, especially if they're bearded iris. Bearded iris should have at least 6 hours of light a day, and they perform much better in full sun. The other thing that happens a lot of times for irises not blooming is that they need to be divided. They grow in the same spot. The nutrients are always coming from the same spot, and they need to be, you know, moved to a different spot or lifted and the soil amended and then replanted so that they'll grow. And I would say if you say you have 80% shade, that's part of the problem as well.
Sure. Go ahead, Lloyd.
And if you have a place to put them in the sun, that's great. If you can't, there are actually a few irises that are shade irises, such as Tectorum, and then the crested irises that grow. The crested irises grow like in Pennsylvania in the mountains, and they actually grow in shade.
Okay. Well, thanks, Connie. You might want to think about moving those and getting one that will fit there. And that you can usually tell when they have to be divided, when they're not blooming, or there's like that hole in the middle, right, where there's nothing in the middle.
That happens more with Siberian iris. They get the center dies out. But yeah, with bearded iris, they tend to start growing on top of each other. And even if you lift that whole thing, there'll be rhizomes, but the roots haven't gone down in. And then the fans tend to get small. And then, you know, then that makes the production go down in blooming. They like to be divided. The normal thing is usually we say for bearded iris, they should be divided every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
And if you have Iris like what they call virgin soil that have never been planted in before, and they will take off. And you might have to divide them like after 2 years because the clump will get so big. But there is a lot of beauty to be said for a mature clump of iris in full bloom, that, you know, you have a clump that has 20 or 30 stalks.
Right.
30 might be extreme, but, but you know, like
lots of them.
I definitely have had clumps that had like 20 stalks on them. And then it's just, you know, a beautiful display
sure.
of color
yeah.
and of that variety.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have one more question here. Oh, I don't know who the person is calling yet. We'll wait. We're apparently not finished with that. But we did have someone ask the location of your business, George. You're not open for the public, though, right?
Not at this time. Mm-hmm. Just on our open houses and sale. Mm-hmm. We're located between Brooklyn and Oregon.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a website, so you can go to the website and check it out. Actually, it's breezewayiris.com. And unfortunately, the timing of this program doesn't quite work with our sale season because our website just closed yesterday.
Did it really?
For internet sales. So, but if local people can definitely look up there and find out about our iris sale next weekend.
Sure.
And, oh, Lloyd, I was going to say, we didn't say where our iris club sale is. So we should say.
Oh, we didn't get to that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's at West Agricultural Center. It's on Mineral Point Road. And if you get on Mineral Point Road and go under the Beltline, it's about a quarter of a mile west of the Beltline.
Okay.
And you'll see all the gardens around it, and you'll see a big sign out in front that says, Welcome Madison Area Iris Society, mm-hmm. and there's a sale sign there.
Yeah, and it'll be easy enough to find on the internet, too. And you do have a Facebook page for the Madison Iris Society. So that information is on there also. Mm-hmm. So it's just what, Madison Iris Society, just look it up and
Madison
you'll find
Area
it.
Madison Area Iris Society
Area,
is
okay.
the name of
yep.
the club.
Okay,
yes.
Great. All right. Why is it that it's this time of the year that you're selling the irises and people are thinking, oh, well, you know, they're all beautiful and blooming in the spring. So why do you sell them now?
Well, they kind of tend to go into a summer semi-dormancy, so that's why this is the best time to mm-hmm. divide them. And also our area, since our season is a little shorter than some other parts of the country, you want to have them definitely planted by no later than September 1st so
okay.
that they have a good chance to get root development before our freezes, which can start as early as mid-October.
Shh, don't say that.
well, today, you never know.
Today, oh God. Yeah, not today, that's for sure.
some irises, like Siberian iris, a lot of sellers are starting now to also ship them in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they're a little, you know, they have to be sent with their roots wet.
Oh.
And bearded iris are sold usually as a dry root cutting of a single rhizome.
Okay.
And so that's a little different, too. Timings can change for shipping depending on what species of iris you want,
mm-hmm.
too. But, you know, like I said, most people think of bearded iris, and so this is the time for that.
For the bearded iris. Okay, yeah. Lloyd.
And if people stop at our sale and buy any of the non-bearded irises, they're in bags. That have soil moist crystals in them.
Oh, okay.
And then if you plant them, you should plant the soil moist crystals
sure.
with the plant when you plant it. And those soil moist crystals will actually nourish the plant for years coming.
Oh, interesting.
And the roots latch onto them, and during dry times, they will just bring them down to the size of a grain of salt.
Wow.
And then when it rains, they swell up to, you know, quite large, and then they can feed the plant
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I've seen those in, like, you know, potted plants and things like that, but I didn't think about those for perennials or what have you.
Yeah, and it helps them get started that first year.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they wouldn't need them as much, but since the crystals do last, they can help the plant actually established for a couple of years.
Okay. Well, we're talking about irises with Lloyd Ravet and George Bacon of the Madison Iris Society. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Dave Potras is our technical director. Join in the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us next week. Melinda Myers will be back with us to talk about how you can keep your garden looking great in the summer heat. We all need that. That's next week on Garden Talk. But right now, we're talking about irises, and we can also take questions about other hardy ornamentals like daylilies and peonies. So give us a call. Right now, we're going to go to Kel in Sugar Camp, and she's got a question. Hi, Kel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was visiting a friend many years ago in Upper Inwood, New Jersey, and the Iris Club there have a huge iris garden, mostly bearded, and they go, some of the cultivars go back to the late 1600s. I was wondering if you'd ever had a chance to see that or if you heard about it. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's actually the Presby Memorial Iris Garden, and they're the oldest iris garden in the country, I believe. And in fact, next year, the American Iris Society Convention will be celebrating its 100th birthday at that garden.
Oh.
And so, because that's where the American Iris Society was formed in, what would it be, 1920? 100 years ago?
1920, good math.
And so, but yeah, I actually was there, I believe it was 3 years ago. And unfortunately for me, I was there about a week early.
No.
They weren't. They had a few things in bloom, but and they had a whole lot of buds, but they were a little bit early.
Mm-hmm.
And it, yeah, it's quite a magnificent display. And next year they're having, you know, an American Iris Society display garden there as well as their own. And I believe they're having some kind of a competition. I'm not exactly right off the top of my head, I can't remember all the details, but there's some kind of competition that they're having there.
Very cool.
And like I said, all to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the American Iris Society. So, yeah, it's a beautiful place and definitely worth the visit.
Neat.
If you're in that area.
Sure. Well, thanks for the question, Kel. You didn't stump George, so we're one for one. Now, Kay in La Crosse has a question. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'm going to be digging up my bearded iris because they need digging up. And they're rather old bulbs. I've had them for a long time. And I'm wondering, I'm not going to be able to replant them right away. I'll need to store them for a short time, but I'll try to get them in the ground, as you suggested, by September 1st. But in the meantime, what is the best way to store the bulbs?
I think usually you just want to keep them in a cool, dry place. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, I mean, this time of year, especially with the weather we've been having, the humidity is bad, so just check them and make sure that they're not starting to get moldy or anything like that. One thing they say to keep them out of the ground longer is actually not to clean them. Just shake the dirt off, trim the foliage, trim the roots if you want, and make a clean cut where you're dividing. But then don't wash them or anything. They'll actually stay better just as they are. And then when you're ready to plant them, you might want to get rinse them with a 10% bleach solution. So one part bleach to 10 parts water, and that'll take care of any fungus or anything that might be there. And it's a good idea anytime you lift your plants to kind of do this. But you do have to make sure to rinse them thoroughly afterwards. And again, like I said, sometimes it makes them not quite last as long out of the ground. So that's why I said wait and do it right before you plant them mm-hmm. again.
As much time as quickly as possible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Kay. Good luck digging those up. We did get a picture from someone. Adam emailed a photo from a recent trip down a secluded Door County waterway. Obviously, he's not sharing that. It was full of irises and lilies, and he's wondering if they are invasive. Now, lilies, I'm assuming he's maybe talking about the orange ones, but I don't see any in that picture. I see yellow irises. And water. Oh, maybe water lilies. Maybe he was talking about water lilies because I see a bunch of those.
It looks like an iris pseudocorus. And It actually has recently been put on the invasive species list in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Because we used to sell them at Breezeway and at the club sales, and now they're telling us we shouldn't anymore.
Ah, okay.
So,
well, are there native irises in Wisconsin, Lloyd?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
There's the, what is it, the blue flag? And going back to Pseudocorus, if you go to the state of Washington, like we have cattails along our waterways, they have that Pseudocorus iris grown everywhere along all the waterways in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the some states, they don't want you bringing them across state lines, the Pseudocorus, because it can spread very, very rapidly. The one I've grown, the Pseudocorus, is called Danu, and the reason I grew that is because it's a tetraploid. It doesn't spread like the other one.
Okay.
And it's also, for breeding purposes, it's double the chromosome, so it can cross with different things.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. And the water lilies, do either of you know anything about the water lilies? I mean, that's a native, right? I mean, there's no flowers, so it's hard to tell what colors they are. But the irises were yellow. Now, is the native flower iris yellow, or is it a blue-purple?
Personally, I haven't really seen the yellow one in the wild in Wisconsin, but as far as like water lilies, I mean, almost any waterways, you find water lilies growing, even in Upper Michigan, where I'm from, the tributaries of the Menominee River, the smaller rivers, they were just filled with water lilies. They're beautiful.
Yeah, they are. Okay, we have another call. We've got Vicki on the line from Mount Horeb. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I have a question with regard to the iris stalk where the bloom happened this spring. You know, it's this big, tall, tough stalk. Should that be cut out? Or doesn't it matter?
It is a good idea to cut them out for a couple of reasons. One, you don't, unless you've planned to make an iris cross and you want to create new varieties, you don't want it to go to seed and form a seed pod that might splay seeds out all over your garden, because then things will come up and not be true to the parent.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason is if you cut them off, then all the energy will be directed into the fans that will be the bloom stalks next year.
I
recommend cut it as soon as it's done blooming, cut it off about an inch above the ground, and then it should just dry out naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to dry out quicker, if you're worried about all the rain and everything, if you get a can of Comet and sprinkle it on that stump, it'll heal up very quickly.
Comet. Okay.
Yes.
Do you know why?
Because of the bleach that's on it.
Oh, interesting.
Like when George was saying, 10% bleach before to treat them before you plant them.
Okay.
The same thing there. By putting that the Comet, it has bleach in it, and it'll make that wound heal very quickly, just like with trees when they cut them. Sometimes they put a sealant on them to make them heal quicker.
Yeah, which usually isn't a good idea, FYI. But anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, for those who aren't familiar, what do we see when we dig up an iris? I mean, how does it grow?
Well, when you buy a plant, usually that becomes what they would call the mother rhizome.
Okay.
And usually from the back or the sides is where the increases come from. And so when you dig it up, it's usually come out from the mother rhizome two or three times at least.
Mm-hmm. And like fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so when you divide it, you want to, like the center part that has bloomed, that bloom stalk rhizome will never bloom again.
Oh, really?
It's done. It's formed its function. It bloomed and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pieces, the increases that come off of that are what will make the bloom stalks next year. And then it's the same thing. So it should keep growing off the center. So the center part is no longer viable.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, now they're saying some of the varieties are so prolific at making babies, we call them baby rhizomes, that I've seen cases where they planted that back and it'll actually still make new
ones. Make another one. Wow. But,
so if you have something rare or something that you're really worried about, you know, keeping, you can try that. But I've never tried that because the bigger fans are always much more productive and stuff. So we do have a really nice display board at our iris sale with lots of photos on how to divide bearded iris.
Okay.
So it's it is a process.
Sure.
And it is hard to if you really are have never done it before, to sort of figure out what's the viable fans versus the ones that have already produced a stock.
Right. Lloyd, you had something to add to that?
And it's possible that when you buy a single fan and plant it, the next year maybe it'll bloom as a single fan. And in that case, I would cut it so that you're leaving a couple of leaves on it at the bottom. So that it can put that energy into growing the babies, because maybe it hasn't grown any rhizomes alongside of it. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a chance, and I have had that happen. And as far as the species, the same kind of principle. You can cut out. You know, you can leave the seed pods there, but there again, they could seed all over the place, especially the Siberians and Insada irises, things like that. They have seed pods with many, many seeds in them. And you can cut those all out when they're done blooming. And the same kind of principle for those with dividing. When you dig them up, you can almost, Insada iris, take an axe and chop them apart because they get almost like a stump in the base.
Oh, yeah. I had them growing near my pond. And the same thing happened. I let them go to seed, and then the next year I had more yellow iris, but they were a pale color, so they weren't true to the original. So that must have been exactly what happened. I wondered. Yep. So good to know. We've got Steve in Boulder Junction who has a question about lilies. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I've got a slope that I want to put ditch lilies on, and I want them to be take over this whole steep side hill, so I don't have to mow it. I'm wondering if there's something they can do to encourage them to spread extra fast to cover this area up.
Okay, thanks, Steve. They grow pretty fast.
They grow really fast, and they're what they call stoloniferous, which means that they grow like a snake. They go, they can grow under a rock and everything. You know, they'll spread horrendously.
Put them somewhere where you don't care if they spread out, right?
And you do not want to plant those in your perennial bed because they will grow to the next plant and come up right inside of the next plant next to it. They belong in a ditch.
No love lost there, Lloyd. We're talking about irises today and other hardy ornamentals with George Bacon, president of the Madison Area Iris Society and owner of Breezeway Iris Gardens, and Lloyd Ravet, also a member of the Madison Area Iris Society. Do you have a question? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email. That address is ideas@wpr.org, and send a picture. Hopefully we can help you identify an iris that you have maybe in your garden or inherited. I think a lot of us inherit those irises, don't we? I mean, they're everywhere, especially if you get an older home. The irises are there. How do you know, how do you figure out what kind you have? Is there a way to do that? I mean, references?
It can be difficult because there's so many different cultivars, available, and they date, in this country, like I said, the American Iris Society is celebrating its 100th anniversary. And so, they've been breeding iris since before that. And so, but there is a wonderful website now linked with Wikipedia. It's called the Iris Wiki.
Oh, wow.
And it has a wonderful resource of cultivars with photos and stuff and descriptions. What's going to happen, though, is the older iris, the descriptions required by AIS were very slight.
Okay.
And so sometimes they actually had this thing called a color chart that they used.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll just say in the description, color chart 103.
That's it. Nothing
like that,
else.
And you'd be like, unless you have that chart, you don't know what the color is. But there also is a section of the American Iris Society that's the Historic Iris Preservation Society.
Okay.
They also have an excellent website. And if you navigate through it, I don't have it in front of me right now, but there's a way to navigate through it. And they have this ID thing that you can select the color of the standards, the color of the falls, and certain other aspects, height and stuff, and it'll give you suggestions as to what it might be.
Okay.
Now, exactly what we talked about, though, with seeds falling from, unattended pods, that happens a lot, too, and it's not really a cultivar. if it's been growing in the graveyard or the yard and unattended for years, who knows what it is, because it could just be a natural hybrid.
Yeah.
But if it's nice and you like it,
just enjoy it.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Now, when you were talking about the falls, what are you talking about?
So most iris have three parts in some form or another. Mm-hmm. So the standards are the part that go above the center of
go up.
And then the falls come down.
On the side.
And then in between are called style arms, and that's actually where you would make crosses. The pollen is there, and everything that you need to make a cross.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then with the bearded iris, is that a different part?
Yeah. The beard is on the fall.
Okay, okay,
and so
it comes there. Yeah,
and all iris as the stamen is located right under the style arm. So if you picture a bee crawling in a flower, he's going to rub his back on that.
Okay.
And the style arm contains a thing. It looks almost like a little flexible fingernail. And when the bee comes out, he holds that shut. And when he goes into the next flower, he's going to touch that little thing, and it's going to flip like a and rub pollen on it.
Wow.
So the bee will not pollinate the flower that he's coming out of with its own pollen, but he will pollinate the next one.
Isn't that amazing how that works? Let's go back to the phones. We have Patricia in Madison. Hi, Patricia. What's your question?
Good morning. Could the gentleman go over the proper way to plant irises? I think there is some specific way that one has to do it.
Okay, I'll bet you they could. Who wants to take that, George?
So, again, it depends a little bit on your variety or your species that you're planting. But for bearded iris, there's a rhizome. And that rhizome, when it's settled, you want to be exposed a little bit to the sun. So you don't want to bury them too deep. That's the most common thing for bearded iris, is people plant them too deep. Other kinds of iris have like a crown on them. And depending on the variety, the classification or whatever, that might need to be a little more protection. And so a lot of times, like Siberian iris, I think they say the crown should be 1/2 to 1 inch below the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But for bearded iris, when they settle in, you definitely want to have the rhizome exposed. And some people even put them, mound a little dirt soil and then plant it on top of that mound so it drains away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you can take and make a trench kind of, and then make a little mound in the center and put it on top and spread the roots around, and then bring the soil back up on around the roots. And then, and like I said, when it's settled, after you've watered and stuff, you should see the top of the rhizome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they grow. They're not real difficult. I mean,
no.
I've had them where I've thrown them in a compost heap and there they come, growing out, because, there was nothing around it.
One thing that's interesting about bearded iris, actually most iris I think are like this, is the roots that you plant them with are just there to hold it in. It grows new roots.
It does.
If you dig it up like a year later, you'll see the roots exactly where you trimmed them off. Just they've sort of dried up or whatever, and it's made all new roots. Mm. So there are people that cut all the roots off and plant them, and either use a landscaping pin to hold it down until it takes root, or some people put a little stone or a brick on top of the rhizome until it. But a lot of people, leave the roots so it has something to anchor it in the soil till the new roots take hold.
Right, right.
But
that makes sense. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the question, Patricia. And speaking of questions about planting, Audrey emailed in, she has a few questions, actually. She has Siberian iris that are not blooming and is wondering if dividing them would help. If she wants to plant them back in the same area, how can she amend the soil? And also, are there any red irises?
Well, ahead, I can, I'll start with the red answer first. Breeders are, it's like the magic color. It's like the blue daylily, the red iris. We keep getting closer and closer every year, but we're, what you think of red versus a rose or something like that, we're nowhere close. The Louisiana iris probably has the reddest iris of all the different species.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck with that one, Audrey. But what about our other question? And she's wondering about dividing her Siberian irises because they're not blooming.
Yeah. Again, there's probably a big circle in the middle of it. What's happened is there's a lot of dead material in the middle of that. I would just lift them up, take an axe or whatever, chop them up, and then plant the pieces back. I know, on especially the Ensata iris of the Japanese irises, they actually grow up and out each year. So on those, actually planting them a little bit deep, and then as they grow in a circle, and they keep growing more fans to the outside of the circle, and they also grow up a little bit each year. So that if they're left in one place for too many years, you need to dig them up, chop them all up, and then plant them deeper again.
Okay. And should she amend the soil when she does that?
That's probably a good idea. I personally don't usually bother with that.
I think if they've been there for years, it never hurts to use like a natural amendment like well-rotted compost.
Okay. Yeah.
And then a Siberian iris, you can use a little peat because they actually like a slightly acidic soil.
Okay.
So not, you know, very acid, but slightly acidic.
Just a little bit.
And so you can use a little peat in there, which also, since they like moisture, that helps with that a little bit too.
Okay.
And, you know, any kind of balanced fertilizer. With using fertilizers with bearded iris, you have to be more careful because bearded iris do not like nitrogen or high nitrogen fertilizers. It can induce all kinds of problems. But Siberian and Japanese iris, since they're a completely different species, they actually react better to a balanced fertilizer. Okay. But I would never use like lawn fertilizer, that's high nitrogen.
Sure, sure.
Something balanced, you know, 10-10-10 or whatever.
Okay.
And you get reblooming iris, isn't it? A super phosphate is what would be recommended to get rebloomings to rebloom?
Yeah, usually after the spring bloom, to encourage the rebloom, you want to, you know, give them... again, I usually use like a 5-10-10 type thing, but and then give, you know, a good feeding. And then the other thing with reblooming irises is they need regular watering.
Okay.
We have a dwarf reblooming iris for our area called Forever Blue.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of the joke with that iris is every time it rains, it sends up a stalk.
He must be doing well this year.
Yeah. So that's actually one of the best reblooming irises.
Okay.
And actually dwarf iris in general do really well here for
us. Well, great to know. Lloyd Revay and George Bacon of the Madison Iris Society are our guests on Garden Talk today. Join in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller today. I hope you can join us on Monday at this time. We'll be talking to Daniel Golden of Boswell Books about great summer reading. And then at 11:45, we'll check in with Reggie McLeod of Big River Magazine. Right now, we are talking about irises, and we've got a number of calls. So let's go to Bill in Madison right now. Hey, Bill.
Hey, thanks. Thank you.
Yes.
So I'll be dividing some German irises next week, and I assume that I should, after I dig them up, use a sharp knife to cut them up and cut out any diseased or rotten areas, should I let those wounds heal and callus over a little bit before replanting? And give me one more time about the 10% solution of Clorox. Dip them in the 10% Clorox of solution and then wash that off.
Okay, so the first part of your question is, yes, use a knife. It's definitely better to have a clean wound than a ripped wound. Mm. Okay. The best way to deal with the wound is to just let it dry for a day or two. It doesn't have to dry for weeks or callus over. You can try what Lloyd had mentioned earlier about sprinkling a tiny bit of Comet on it. That'll, you know, help if you like have to replant them right away. Like I know some people dig and replant the same day because that's the time frame they have.
Right.
And in that case, I would recommend using that to, you know, give it just a little protection there. But as long as it dries for a couple days, again, I wouldn't put them in the sun or anything. Just let them dry in a cool, dry area. Like we have racks that, you know, like that they just
like
lay
screens.
Out on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, I'm sorry, I just blanked out. What's the rest of the question, please?
I think he asked about the 10% solution for bleach.
Oh,
for bleach.
Yes. It's so 10 parts, you know, 10 to 1. So mm-hmm. 1 part bleach to 9 parts of water. And usually you soak them for 10 to 15 minutes. And try and concentrate it more just on the rhizome and the roots. So, and then rinse them off well.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so just do that and rinse them off and you should be good to go. Thanks, Bill. Next up we have Linda. She's in Sheboygan. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the National Alliance on Mental Illness is called the IRIS, the newsletter. And it's because Vincent van Gogh painted irises, and I don't know what kind of irises he painted, but that's why the state newsletter is called the Iris.
So do you gentlemen have any idea what that iris could have been that he was painting? No.
It could have been a blue flag.
I'm assuming
Pallida. And the Boy Scout emblem is actually a fleur-de-lis, which is a symbol of the iris.
Right. And I think one of the Louis in France, that was his symbol, and that came from that. And speaking of blue iris, we did get a photo, they wanted to know if you could help IDing this. It's a beautiful blue.
It looks like Caesar's brother.
Bearded iris. Okay. It's a Caesar's brother, possibly. That's Lloyd's guess. George,
yeah,
maybe?
It's
yes.
Definitely a Siberian.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a Siberian.
But
mm-hmm.
Caesar's brother is the most commonly cultivated blue violet iris. You know, it's very widely distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So I would guess that too.
Okay. All right, then let's go to Lois in Menominee Falls. She has a question. Hi, Lois.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have several varieties of bearded iris. One of them has about 3 foot tall bloom stalks, and they're beautiful. I know these need to be divided because the rhizomes are crowded on top of the soil, but my concern is that the leaves and the flower stalks for the last several years have been growing at about a 30-degree angle to the top of the soil rather than growing vertically. And I'm hoping that when I divide them the next year, they will grow like they're supposed to, or do I need to do something special to get them to behave?
I think it is just what you said, that they're large clumps, so that they tend to go out away from the clump to get to the sun, rather than growing straight up as they would on a smaller clump. So that's what I would say, if you divide and replant them, they should go back to standing up straight. But definitely, when you have a large mature clump, they do come. The center ones can tend to go straight up, and the ones around the outer edges can tend to come out at a slight angle. And the rhizomes do that too, because they're trying to find space.
Sure,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it might be from wind, or maybe it's something that just needs to be staked in this area, in which case, if it's an iris you really want, maybe you want to stake it or get irises that don't need staking.
So she said it was 3 feet tall, and that's pretty tall
yeah,
for,
that's
for
on
an
the higher
iris.
End. Mm-hmm.
When you do stake an iris, what's the best way to do that? What's the best material?
There's several ways you can do it, but I use the little single loops.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's like a wire that comes up and makes a little loop. But you can also use like jute string, mm-hmm. and bamboo poles.
Mm-hmm.
Like I bought like a whole, I have enough bamboo poles to last me the rest of my life because I bought a case of them.
Oh, of course, you need to have a case. You got a better deal, right?
But like this year, I kind of was expecting with all the rain we had that we would have some weaker stalks, mm-hmm. and I hardly used any poles. The loops I had was plenty for what I needed.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that call, Lois. Excuse me. Marilyn in South Range, you're next. Hi, Marilyn.
Well, my comment, I've got a comment and a question. My comment is last fall I dug some up to divide them, but I didn't get them all. I live in South Range, which is way up by Superior. I didn't get them all put back in the ground, and it was in October. And I thought, well, and so I put them in a box, put them in my next to my garden, and we got snow. So therefore, they were covered all winter. I moved the box into the garage this summer, and then I was cleaning the garage in June or July. They are still alive. They are very tiny, but the plants will produce in a couple years. And so to show how hardy, I think they're bearded irises. They're the traditional old-fashioned ones. But they're still alive. So I've got them in a pot with soil and taking care of them now. So I think they will produce eventually.
Yeah.
And Marilyn, did you have a question?
Yeah, my question is, I have some irises that I had to put in my vegetable garden, but I want to move them, and I just want to know the optimum time to move them or to, you know, get them out of that garden. And
have they just been in for 1 year?
Oh, they've been there for about 2 or 3 or 4
years. Oh, so you need to divide them. Because sometimes I've had to move iris that have just been in a year, and in that case I try and lift like a soil clump around it and try and do it. I do it in the spring usually, but I've done it all times a year, you know, just out of necessity sometimes. But if they need to, if they've been in there for a couple of years, now is the time to just lift them, divide them, and then replant.
Okay, well, thank you, Marilyn. Let's go to Susan in Waukesha. Hi, Susan.
Hello. I have 3 questions, actually. My neighbor is the iris grower, but his hearing problem is that he's asking me to ask questions. 1, what to do about iris leaf spot, which is sort of a mildewy thing on the leaves. 2, the iris borer. And then 3, to preserve, he has dusted them with antifungal and put them in peat moss and was wondering if that is correct and how long he can keep them that way.
So he's trying to preserve them out of the ground, you mean, till he can plant them?
Yes.
I've never done it that way. I've just always done it as bare root and then try and keep them in a cool, dry place. And as our previous caller mentioned, I've heard her story many times where somebody forgets about iris and they find them in their garage the next year and they're still viable. I had a customer who came and said he'd been carrying around his grandfather's iris for 5 years till he had his own home to live and they all lived.
Wow.
So, but I've never tried that, Lloyd. Have you ever tried storing them in peat moss?
Even though irises are awfully hardy, we don't recommend you treat them this way.
Don't try it at home. But the peat moss, have you done that, Lloyd?
No, not peat moss. Mm-hmm. I think just
I tried 1 year.
Leaving them to the bare root. Mm-hmm. The bare root, and maybe in a cool, dry place would be better than, you know, in hot sun or something.
Okay.
But
Yeah. And and we've got like 2 minutes before we have to go to news. So can we deal with the leaf spot and the iris borer, two nasty things that they can
They're definitely, especially with the rain we've had the last year, leaf spot's definitely a problem with many, many different plants. So you just need some kind of fungicide. There's many different kind of fungicides. Leaf spots can resist fungicides if they've been used over and over again. So a lot of times they recommend using two or three different types. There's even a homemade solution using baking soda and a little soap, is it? I can't remember what that one was.
Like a bacterial soap, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, but you need to spray them like every 10 days from the time that they're about 3 inches high in the spring until they're blooming. That's what the official documentation is. But I've done it at all times.
Okay. And then the iris borer?
So can we come back to that? It's a long answer.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been talking about irises with Lloyd Revay and George Bacon of the Madison Iris Society. I'm Jill Nadeau. And next week on Garden Talk, Melinda Myers will be back with us to talk about how you can keep your garden looking great in the summer heat. Hope you can join us and try to get out to the iris sale. It's going to be this weekend at the West Madison Agriculture Research Station on Mineral Point Road in Verona. We are talking about irises on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network. George Bacon, president of the Madison Area Iris Society and owner of Breezeway Iris Gardens, is our guest, along with Lloyd Revay. He's also a member of the Madison Area Iris Society. What are your favorite iris varieties? Do you have a question about daylilies, peonies, or any other hardy ornamental? We can take some of those, too, so give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, the number, 1-800-642-1234. So, George, you left us in suspense as we went to the news about what to do about the iris borer, nasty little bugger.
So, yeah, they are probably the biggest problem that irises can have. And the best thing is prevention. So you want to deal with them early in the year. They are actually from a moth egg.
Ah.
And, you know, they grow into a grub. So you want to deal with them early in the spring. And the treatment time in our area is signaled by when the forsythia bloom. We always say treat your iris when the forsythia bloom.
Okay.
And the most common treatment right now is using a product called Merit. And it comes in different kinds. You can get granular. You can get liquid. What you have to be careful with the liquid kind is to get one that doesn't have additional fertilizer in it, because sometimes they mix with a fertilizer.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And especially, like I said earlier, the high nitrogen, you really want to stay away from that. But because of the cycle, you really only need to treat it that one time a year if you're using that method. Now, unfortunately, you know, along with some of the earlier methods used, now Merit, which the active ingredients, if I can say this right, is imidacloprid.
Okay.
I don't know if I said that right. But anyway, unfortunately, that's the chemical that they're now saying is killing bee populations.
Ooh, yeah.
And some places have, Wisconsin hasn't yet, but some places have outlawed it.
Okay.
There are a couple organic ways. One is using Murphy's oil soap in a 10% solution, because it's kind of like a lot of things, you know, like insects, soapy things they don't like. What happens is the eggs hatch and then they go and eat the leaves. So another organic way is just what we call the squeeze.
Oh, dear.
And if you don't have that many iris, you can accomplish it. When you have like what I have, there's just no way you could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But is to just look for damage of the leaves and kind of a serrated edge. And a lot of times there's little water streaks. And you can either follow that dye and find the little worm. And at that time of year, they're only like a quarter to about half an inch. And you can either pull them off and squeeze them dead. Mm-hmm. Or some people squeeze them dead right at feel down the leaves and can find them and squeeze them dead there. Mm-hmm. And that's the truly organic method.
Yeah. Sure. They can use a pin to fish them out too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, but by the time they they're really doing damage to your iris, it's the biggest, ugliest pink grub you've ever seen. And the other thing too is once they've done that damage to the rhizome, it can induce all kinds of other things like soft rot and stuff, because they just leave a big hole there, making it exposed for all kinds of other things to invade.
Right.
So yes, they definitely are a problem, but try and deal with it in the early spring so that they don't mature. And then because that's when they can do damage to your
iris. So they start on the leaf and then they work their way down into the rhizome. Is that correct? So when you dig them up, and because I've had that problem, you can see them in there. So do you just cut those guys away? What do you do?
That fan is probably toast.
Is it? Okay.
So yeah, you can kill the grub. A lot of people, like Lloyd said, wire the grub so it kills it or fish it out if they have to. But I tried an experiment one time where I had iris that came from somewhere that had some, and the holes were so clean that I thought, I'll just see, but they didn't live.
They didn't live.
Yeah.
Okay.
They just, so.
So prevention.
Unfortunately, you can lose a whole bed you know, to that. And the thing, and you just have to kind of start over.
Because there's all kinds of new varieties you want to try anyway, right? Okay, let's go back to the phones. Donna in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Donna. Donna, you there?
There's a perfume called Oris, O-R-R-I-S, and I heard it's made out of irises. Now, what iris, do you know anything about that, and which iris would you use, or do you hear about that?
That I'm not familiar with at all.
No, they don't really, irises, I mean, they kind of smell some of them do.
Some of them do, but sweet, you know, at this point, irises aren't necessarily bred for fragrance.
Right.
And so people always ask that at our sale. They're like, where's the fragrant ones? And it is actually now part of the registration process. You can, you know, and they either can have a spicy fragrance, a musky fragrance, a sweet fragrance.
Okay.
But like I said, it's not something that they're necessarily breeding for.
Sure.
And so, yeah, some of them have no fragrance. There's some that have terrible fragrances.
There's some that smell like grapes. And we do have one at the sale. We have a few of them. That's a plum iris that's from Hungary.
Very interesting.
We actually have some of those at the sale.
Wow, very cool.
Maybe they won't last long now that I said
that. Now that you said it, everybody's getting in their cars right now and driving over there.
But I don't know like what, you know, I don't know enough about perfume making to know what parts of flowers they would use in creating a scent.
Yeah.
But they're definitely our scented iris, so it makes sense, I guess, that you could.
Well, I guess the best bet, Donna, is if you have access to good old Google, I would just do that and see what you come up with.
And if you really want to smell irises, come to the show. When we have it in a room, when you walk in the room, the aroma of the irises will just knock you over. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and your show is usually in the spring, right? When would people?
End of May, beginning of June.
Okay.
Yeah, we have that at Olbrich Garden Center.
Okay.
And we have to adjust depending on the schedule that they have. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that call, Donna. Interesting discussion there. Next, let's go to Carol, and she's in Trigo. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I have a couple of them today. I have some irises, and as I remember back to when I was a little girl, my mother always used to cut the leaves about halfway down after they had bloomed. And I'm wondering if that's a good idea.
I've heard that before, too. Yeah. Is it?
It's a controversy.
Mm. Ooh.
I would say, in general, no. Do not cut them down after they bloom. The leaves, you know, through photosynthesis,
right,
create the energy,
exactly,
for next year's flowers. Mm-hmm. So unless the foliage is damaged or diseased from leaf spot or something else, some other fungal thing, I wouldn't cut them at all. Then the same question applies in the fall. People want to know, do I cut them or do they not? Well, you know, there's two ways. There's always more than one thought, you know, on that thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, but naturally, plants out in nature, you don't trim them.
Right.
So, again, I think it depends on your schedule. I used to live in Michigan, but the iris garden was here. And so we trimmed in the fall because I wouldn't get back from Michigan for an early spring cleanup.
Okay.
But now that I'm here year round, I just let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Because the leaves do offer some protection, but you want to get the leaves off, you know, the dead leaves and stuff off early in the spring.
In the spring.
Not
mm-hmm.
too early, but mm-hmm. early.
Mm-hmm.
And I did forget to say that about cleaning iris up for iris borer. That's a very good prevention because the moths lay the eggs in the leaves in the fall. And usually by the spring, those leaves mm-hmm. are brown and
mm-hmm.
dead.
Mm-hmm.
So if you peel those leaves off and take them away, don't compost them. You know, take them away either to the dump or if you can burn
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you'll get rid of a lot of iris borer eggs that way too.
Okay. And you said peel, so you just pull them off gently?
Well,
or?
Usually when it's sort of a natural process. They mm-hmm. make a fan shape
mm-hmm.
and the outer leaves always die off and then new leaves come up from the center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so those, I say like if they naturally peel, I mean, you don't want to pull. But if they naturally peel away, they're done for.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Sort of like the flower on your hosta. They just
right.
kind of pull out when they're dry.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you asked, too, about foliar feeding. And
what was your question about that, Carol?
A number of years ago, there was a concept about spraying your flowers or whatever it was you were trying to fertilize with a spray fertilizer, and that the leaves would absorb that fertilizer and act better than if you just poured it on the ground around the plants. What is your thinking on that?
You're probably thinking something like a Miracle-Gro that you would just mix up and then spray the plants with. I'm sure that that's an acceptable way to get your plants to grow a little bit better.
I have heard that on the show a few times. Yeah. People have called in and said they like to spray their fertilizer
mm-hmm.
on the plant itself. So,
well, I think it definitely can absorb something, but mm-hmm. I also believe that more nutrients come up through the roots.
That makes mm-hmm. sense to
and
me.
You know, when we were talking about the iris borer, that's actually how the merit works. It's systemic.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes up through the roots, and then when the moths, the eggs hatch, they start eating the iris and it kills them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Well, probably not, Carol. Thank you for the question. And we did have a caller who wanted you to repeat the time and location of the sale once again, which is going on right now. Started today, right? So go ahead, Lloyd.
So it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's from 9 until 5 each day.
Each day. Mm-hmm. And it is in the
West Agricultural Research Center, which is on Mineral Point Road. So if you get off the Beltline on Mineral Point Road, it's about a quarter of a mile west going out in the country, not mm-hmm. not into town.
Yeah, technically, it's Verona, not Madison. So,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, super simple to find. And hopefully you'll get a lot of people out there. So that'd be great. We did have a couple of other questions. Cletus emailed. He was wondering, what are the best reblooming irises for the wonderful state of Wisconsin? I think we mentioned that earlier, but let's repeat that.
If you want some specific variety names, there's a white one called Immortality that's very reliable here. That's a tall bearded. I have really good luck personally with dwarf reblooming iris. One reason is irises kind of bloom in the sequence of their height in general.
Oh, right.
So
makes
the miniatures
sense.
Mm-hmm. and the dwarfs bloom before the intermediates and the talls bloom last.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of the recovery time for rebloom, the dwarfs are done earlier. So they recover and start reblooming.
That makes sense.
And so like I, in my garden right now, like I had mentioned earlier, I have Forever Blue is sending up a stalk here and there. And I have one called Autumn Jester that's reblooming right now.
Wow.
So this is like the earliest, I think, the beginning of the rebloom season for dwarfs.
Yeah, because we're talking July here. That's early.
And then... there's another one called Again and Again that's fairly reliable here. A lot of people think for the Madison area, the absolute best one for a tall is a variety called Autumn Tryst.
Okay.
And I know I saw a tray of it at our sale.
There you go.
So, and then Clarence is
Clarence
one.
Clarence is a good rebloomer.
And Champagne Elegance. What else?
Well, we have a whole table.
You've got to go to the sale. But, I mean, there are people that are listening that are not even really close at all. So that's great information to share with them.
And
so.
It's nice to know that irises, they start in the spring blooming with the iris reticulata blooms with crocuses. And if you go with different species of irises, you could have irises bloom in your garden from the time of crocuses with reticulata all the way until frost.
Oh, wonderful. How tall do those little dwarf ones get? I mean, what are you talking?
There's actually two different classifications. One is miniature dwarf, and I think those are like under 9 inches or maybe 8.
Tiny.
And then the standard dwarf are under 16 inches.
Oh, very
and
nice.
They're really wonderful. They make huge clumps just covered with flowers, and they are the species that they were developed from are quite cold hardy.
Okay.
So they do great here in Wisconsin.
Great.
We have quite a few at the sale.
Yeah. I might have to quit here and go to the sale after. You're tempting me, gentlemen. We do have a couple more calls here. So let's go to Deborah in Brown Deer.
Hi, I have an acquaintance who owns a building in Glendale and in Wisconsin, and he had two huge sections. I mean, there must have been at least 400 yellow iris that I hadn't seen previously. And I went in and asked him if I could have some, and he got a shovel out and dug them up. And I've fallen in love long ago with the yellow flag, but I see that rarely. But this is not a yellow flag, and I wondered, do you know what this is? It looks like the German iris variety, but it's yellow. It's just beautiful.
And it has a beard, so it's definitely bearded.
Yeah, but it's not as big as the lavender ones that I have in my yard. But it's still, maybe because there's so many of them in an enclosed area, like a little square raised garden area, two of the raised gardens, but... If you want some, I could get you some.
Everybody's willing to share.
It's hard to say, you know, because without a photo. Even if you had a photo, it's hard to say because there's, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of varieties of iris. And some are instantly recognizable, which is great. But just from the verbal description, I can't get a good handle. Mm-hmm. Is it a very pale color?
It's yellow, like a Crayola yellow crayon.
It's that bright because a very common iris is that even grows in ditches is flavescens, but it's a pale yellow. But that can naturalize, but I'm trying to think of one that's like a Crayola yellow.
Many cultivars.
Might be a good idea to get a picture, Deborah, and maybe she could put it up on your Facebook page for the Irish Society, and then people could maybe comment. Would that be a good way to do it?
Sure,
why not? So do that, Deborah. Get yourself a picture. Let's go next to Mary. She's on Sugar Island. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Yes, you mentioned lilies. So we have Turk's Cap lily, which I know it must be an old variety because it's been in here forever. And a friend wants some. When is a good time to dig some up to give to someone?
Probably the best time would be either early spring or late fall. you don't want to dig them up during the bloom season.
Okay. Well, that's a simple answer to your question there, Mary. You know, one thing that we haven't talked about, guys, is the actual breeding of different varieties of iris. What's that process like? I mean, what do you do? How do you start?
You look for qualities that you like in a plant.
Okay.
And if you find one that maybe it has the perfect color that you like, and maybe another plant has a plant habit that you like, and then maybe what you want to do is cross those and maybe cross them both ways to see which direction will give you both qualities that you're looking for.
Okay.
And, of course, some of them will have the bad qualities from both the parents.
Kind of like kids,
just,
right?
Kind of like kids.
Well, they are just like kids. Sure. Like when you get a seed pod, it's not some, you know, some plants, every seed will produce the same thing. A seed pod in an iris, every single seed is a different cultivar.
Wow, every single one.
A different cultivar.
Wow.
And so it's a long process, especially in our area, because it can take 2 to 3 years to get a blossom.
Wow.
Some of the dwarfs, you can get a blossom the first year.
Okay.
But talls, you know, it takes a while, and then you have to, you know, again, when it blooms, you kind of select for the qualities that you want to keep. And there's a lot of culling, you know, like people that are really into it, like big iris breeders, they'll have, you know, 6,000 seedlings come up and bloom in 1 year, and they'll maybe keep 100 of them.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of iris death we're talking about.
Yes. You have to be ruthless as a plant breeder. George is introducing a couple for me this year that are Siberian irises, and one of them is just a blue iris. But what's nice about it, both parents would have just two flowers in the top socket, and that's what most Siberians do, and that's what both parents did.
Okay.
So, and I don't know how it happened, but the progeny that I got that he's introducing, it usually has three flowers in the top socket and two branches with a couple flowers on it. So it generally has seven flowers on a stem.
That's a lot.
Which is a lot better than two.
Yeah.
And so even though the flower, it's just like a silvery blue color, isn't anything that knocks your sock off. But the fact that it has more flowers on it, it was worth introducing.
Mm-hmm. So what parts do you use when you're breeding them? I mean, What do you use?
Again, you use the stamen, which is right underneath the style arm. Uh-huh. When George was explaining the three parts of the iris, and the stamen is tucked right under the style arm. So if you're going to do plant breeding, you should use a tweezers because it's
teeny.
You break the flower trying to get it out with your fat fingers. Like okay, what I have. And a tweezers would work best. And then what you want to do is then take that to the flower you want to cross to.
Okay.
And on the style arm, there's a little thing. It looks almost like a little fingernail, but it's very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stigmatic lip.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pistil is actually inside of the style arm. So that, and the ovaries is at the base. So that's where the seeds develop.
Yeah. Wow.
And so you just make a cross and then you mark the cross so that you know what you did.
Yeah, that record keeping has to be really, really important, I'm sure. Well, gentlemen, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming in today. We really, really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Our guests today on Garden Talk have been George Bacon and Lloyd Ravet. They are part of the Madison Iris Society, and their sale begins today, and it continues through Sunday, 9 in the morning till 5 at night, all 3 days, and it's going to be at the West Madison Agriculture Research Station on Mineral Point Road in Verona. Well, I hope you can join us on Monday at this time. Larry's going to be back from vacation, and we'll be talking to Daniel Golden of Boswell Books about great summer reading. And then at 11:45, we'll check in with Reggie McLeod of Big River Magazine to see what's going on at the Mississippi side of the state. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Enjoy your weekend and stay with us. There's lots more to come.